For several years, Clifford Walker has been asking, why don't we remove the symbols of racial oppression from our national currency?
But it seems to me that it's a no-brainer for the people of Portland to protest the fact that our public monies are maintaining memorials to white supremacists and slave breeders.
Clifford Walker was born in Portland and graduated from Jefferson High School in 1961. Upon completing high school, he joined the Air Force. After military service, he returned to Portland to manage the much-loved record store in the heart of the African-American community, the House of Sound. Clifford Walker was also active in civil and social rights movements, including the progressive black politics of the 60s, the anti-apartheid and African liberation campaigns of the 70s and 80s. He's currently chair of the Oregon Commission on Black Affairs, and Clifford Walker would like to see the signs and symbols of racial hate and oppression removed from the public landscape. Tonight on Circle A Radio, we talk with Clifford Walker about his campaign, and we'll revisit the history of the slave owners. Stay tuned.
The foundation of this country is predicated on race. The founding fathers, quote, founding fathers, when they went to Philadelphia, 1788, but they wrote two provisions in the Constitution that dealt with black people, and people don't even know what those are. See, what happened was the Constitution was the worst thing that could have ever happened to black people. Prior to the Constitution, if you were black and a slave, all you had to do was escape from a slave state into a non-slave state or a free state, and you'd be free. But once the Constitution was signed, you had to go all the way to Canada. It became a federal offense to escape. Prior to that, it was like, if you got to New York, you were Massachusetts from South Carolina, you could be free. But when those guys met, the founding fathers met, they ended that. And that's why Harriet Tubman, everybody was going to Canada. We look at the founding fathers differently, because they sold the black people out, and they were real clear about it. And that's my objection to having those as national role models or in our legendary, you know, or in our herald. They all chose to get into slave trading. That was their business. They were businessmen first. George Washington had a prison at a place called Mount Vernon. It was just personal, private slavery. Thomas Jefferson had one at Monticello. Andrew Jackson had one at the Hermitage. These were Virginia men who were in the slave breeding and trading business. Now, these are our images today of who we are. In Germany, they got rid of Hitler as a role model because of what he did to Jewish people. You don't see swastikas and the faces of members of the Third Reich printed on the money, because the people in Germany say, we're embarrassed by that history. But in the United States, we are still celebrating a period of time where atrocities towards people because of the color of the skin. That was the history that we celebrate today. And that's why, you know, memorials like high schools, I feel it's inappropriate to use public funds to maintain memorials to slave traders and white supremacists. Simple. The first thing we did when we went into Iraq was tore down the statues of Saddam Hussein. I mean, they didn't understand what symbols are. We took down statues and got rid of all the artwork. So that was our policy. But we won't even do that here. People don't know who Jefferson and Washington and Jackson are. They know they were presidents, but they don't know they were businessmen and they were trafficking in African people and exploiting them by, you know, slave labor and stuff like that. That's a part of history that just kind of slides by.
George Washington, first president of the United States from 1789 to 1797. Washington became a slave owner at age 11 when he inherited 10 slaves and 500 acres of land. When he began managing the Mount Vernon plantation 11 years later, he had about 36 slaves. By 1799, when George Washington died, there was an estimated 316 slaves living on the plantation. As president, Washington signed the Fugitive Slave Act of 1793, authorizing slave hunters to enter free states and territories to capture runaway slaves, and the Naturalization Act of 1790 that racially allowed only whites to become citizens of the United States. This ultimately barred any freed African Americans from becoming citizens of the United States.
I'm disappointed that I'm talking about it. And we have all these professors in history at the universities and all these human rights. And you would think that if they were educated and knew anything about the history of these people, it wouldn't be hard to discover who they were and what they were about. And somewhere we would say, you know, let's choose the abolitionists as our role models. These are people that were great. It's probably the greatest generation of people. It was when the women really led the abolitionist movement, because they had the right to speak, but they also kind of understood what oppression was. And, you know, the Grimke sisters and what was it, Harriet Beecher Stowe. That's a glorious history, and we don't even recognize it. And I think the abolitionists should be pedestaled higher in our community than the oppressors of African people.
Clifford Walker is one of the alumni of North Portland's Jefferson High School, whose campaign to drop the slave trader's name and embrace something that reflects the neighborhood, such as Walnut Park High. Another suggestion, Paul Robeson High, after the actor and civil rights activist. Here's the voice of Robeson.
I come from a slave father, not grandfather, a slave father, born in eastern North Carolina in 1843, escaped from slavery in 1858, a contemporary co-fighter with Frederick Douglass, Harriet Tubman, John Brown, Sojourner Truth, and William Lloyd Garrison for the freedom not only of the Negro people, but of millions of white workers caught in the same serfdom as their black brothers and sisters. So our brothers and sisters from Mexico, the Philippines, from the lands of Asia, from the West Indies, from Latin America, have come to these shores to share the same fate. And all through our history, the working masses, colored and white, speaking many languages, representatives of the finest of the old and new world cultures, have had to fight every step of the way for a decent wage, for decent homes, for decent education for their children, for human dignity itself.
You're listening to Circle A Radio on KBOO 90.7 in Portland. Tonight we're speaking with Clifford Walker, chair of the Oregon Commission on Black Affairs, about challenging the signs and symbols of racial hate and racial oppression.
I'm working on some money designs, and I was looking at some Chinese money. They have women, oh, beautiful. And they're just like, they're not the rulers or the empresses. It's like, I relate more to the people who harvest the lettuce and the beans in Oregon in the fields, because they made it possible for me to eat cheap and be healthy. I have so much more akin to what they're contributing to my world than Thomas Jefferson or George Washington. So to see the field workers or the truck drivers, you're asking me what I would like to see on the money. I would like to see the general population featured, you know, the factory workers, the farmers, the hospital workers, the astronauts, something we can kind of buy into other than a Virginia slave trader. If you've ever had the opportunity or the good fortune to travel into another country, you become instantly aware of their money. And it's embarrassing to have to exchange slave traders for flowers and flora and fauna. I mean, wherever Americans go, they carry a message of racial hate when they take their money with them. And I don't really think they're aware of it. But the people know who George Washington is. I mean, outside of this country, they know what they were doing. They knew they were operated slave farms and whip people. legislated to deny them their rights. So I get back to it. How is it possible that we don't have this discussion? Or we don't a little more protective of how we're being represented in the world? And I think if we change the design of our money or the symbols of our money, we might change how other people in the world feel about us. And I think we need to work on that.
This is Circle A Radio on KBOO, your community radio station. Tonight, our guest is Clifford Walker.
You wonder if, for example, when they did that Susan B. Anthony dollar, it was designed to fail. Who wants to trade in this? Now, if they had really wanted to elevate contributions of women's history, they would have put it on a paper. And it would have fit in. It wouldn't have been this weird thing. It looked like a quarter. If you notice, she had her hair tied up and she was frowning. If you study money, you see that in World War II, the GIs were paid in this GI currency. The GIs in Germany were paid with money that had these very glamorous Aryan women on it. The GIs in Japan were paid in script that had these very glamorous Asian women on them. You have to look at that. So they know what they're doing. But you look at the money that we get these pictures of these colonial slave traders are wearing wigs and they got ruffles and this. Man, who are these guys? Yeah, I mean, they don't represent the people, you know. So I'd like to see our money be a picture of who we are so we can all buy into it and be proud of it. And I think if you choose a person, you ask the question, who would you replace them with? And that's been some concern. I don't know if I would put a person on the money. Flora and fauna. Put a salmon or a grizzly bear or something, the Grand Tetons or the Pueblos, something that's indicative of the country. What is it, Old Faithful? Something of the geology, you know, so we would feel like, oh, yeah, you know, the giant sequoia trees. That would make a beautiful piece of art. But no, we have 18th century slave traders.
Tonight we're talking with Portlander Clifford Walker. We asked him how we can make a difference on a local level by removing symbols of racial hatred from our schools.
Maybe by going before the school board and asking them to consider what they're doing.
Now this is something you've done, right? So tell us how you've done it.
Well, again, you find out the school board doesn't want to talk about that. And they'll pass it off or put in a special committee. I had the experience of finally getting them to recognize I was serious about having the conversation. So they assigned it to a committee, and was it a lady named Reagan was the head of the committee? And this is the true story. I was on the agenda, and when the item came up for discussion, the meeting was over. And they never invited me back or put it on the next agenda. These are the people who we trust to educate our children. People who will not talk to you. Yeah, I have a witness to that. I have a friend. It was unbelievable. I've talked to all the school board members pretty much. It's as if they go blank. They don't know what to say, so they just go blank. They don't even say, we should have that talk. We should try to resolve this. Let's see if maybe it would be nice for Portland Public Schools to end that tradition of memorializing racists and slave traders. But no, we're going to continue that tradition. Well, what does that tell you about the progressiveness of our school board when they could really impact, like Paul Robeson? Or I really feel that the Native Americans need a greater salute. But we don't even know who they are. But it's not part of our history when it should be. You know, I think we should come up with names that are a little more local for the local schools. I mean, when you got Madison and Jefferson and Jackson as public schools in Portland, Oregon, it's just like, excuse me? You know, don't we have people that we could that contributed to our community, the local people that are deserving of that honor. We have that history. It's here. The people who have fought. And then I jokingly say here, what was it? I think it was 2004. I'm not sure. If there was an effort to create a memorial for the Holocaust victims here. And Portland has this beautiful Holocaust memorial. But you know where it is? In Washington Park. Look at the irony of that. People were pissed off because Hitler was using Jewish people for slave labor. But they put a memorial in a park named after a person who practiced slave labor. Now, how do you rectify that? So we're not even considered as being worthy of respect. Not in this country. You cannot respect people of African ancestry and still celebrate the lives of slave traders. And that's a national policy. They will say to Africans or African Americans or Negroes or whatever you choose to call them, can't you get over it? I'm saying we probably could, but every time you look at a dollar, you're reminded. Or every time you look at a quarter, you're reminded. Why don't you help us get over it? You know, it's like every time you look at a penny. Lincoln was a race supremacist. He never intended blacks to vote or to be equal. But we have cloaked and we have lied and lied and we're not fessing up to the truth. So I'm hoping that we can have that dialogue. And if you can convince me, I like to think I have an open mind, but if you can convince me that Virginia slave breeders and traders are worthy of our continued support as national images and symbols, I'll listen to your argument.
We asked Clifford how there could be so little concern on the part of the school board. This is what he had to say.
And it's a reflection of the kinds of curriculums they're giving their children. Because the school board will say, well, you know, that's something the kids need to do. Well, kids are as ignorant as everybody else. You know, we look at the board for leadership, not followership, you know, followership, you know. But that's how they put politics is a game. They count the votes. There's not a whole lot of leadership. People want to stay in the position, so they kind of get in the back row and see which way it's flowing, and then run to the front, you know. But it seems to me that it's a no-brainer for the people of Portland to protest the fact that our public monies are maintaining memorials to white supremacists and slave breeders.
Thomas Jefferson was the third president of the United States from 1801 to 1809. According to historian Stephen Ambrose, quote, Jefferson, like all slaveholders and many other white members of American society, regarded Negroes as inferior, childlike, untrustworthy, and of course, as property. Jefferson, the genius of politics, could see no way for African Americans to live in society as free people. Jefferson was the first president to propose the idea of a formal Indian removal plan. Andrew Jackson is most tied to Indian removal because Congress passed the Indian Removal Act in 1830 during his presidency, and also because of his personal involvement in the forceful extermination and removal of many Eastern tribes. But Jackson was legalizing and implementing a plan laid out by Jefferson in a series of private letters that began in 1803. Jefferson's first promotions of Indian removal were between 1776 and 1779, when he recommended forcing the Cherokee and Shawnee tribes to be driven out of their ancestral homelands to lands west of the Mississippi River. Jefferson's original plan was for natives to give up their own cultures, religions, and lifestyles in favor of a Western European culture, Christian religion, and a sedentary agricultural lifestyle. In cases where native tribes resisted assimilation, Jefferson believed that they should be forcefully removed from their land and sent west.
And when I look at Jefferson High School, I went there and I know the education I got there, and there wasn't much discussion or talk about who Thomas Jefferson was, and especially what his attitudes were towards black people.
As someone who went there, and we've talked about the unresponsiveness of leadership, but like when you talk to just regular people about it, What's usually their response, and especially like alumni who have maybe an emotional attachment to Jeff because that's where they went to school, but do they respond positively when they think about it? Or?
Well, it depends. Some do. Some people think. I mean, it. You know, it's how you approach it. If you went to the average person and you said, don't you think it would be a good idea to take the faces of racists or race supremacists and slave traders and breeders off our money? They'll say, yeah. And then they'll say, who are you talking about? They don't know who these guys are that we continue to celebrate. Kids, it's a no-brainer. They don't, you know, once you bring it to their attention, you know, like, yeah. I mean, I can't believe, you know, nobody told me that they were slave traders or racists. You know, I'm just going along with the program. But, you know, if this is true, we shouldn't have it. The old farts, they're so into the rah-rah, the blue and gold, the sports traditions, the Rose Festival traditions, and they can't see past, you know, the importance of maybe getting involved in doing something. You know, we go to a class reunion, you know. I don't want to be a party pooper, but maybe the class of 61, we could stand for something, you know. Well, good luck. It'll never happen. I said, it certainly won't happen if we don't try. I know that, you know. But we have a black, so-called first black president, so maybe it can happen. I don't know. You know, Martin Luther King had a dream, right? Well, I had a dream. I had a dream that I lived in a nation where the face of racists weren't on the money. I had a dream. You know, we all have dreams, you know, and I'd like to think that my dream will come true. And I love the idea of baby steps. Maybe we could make the abolitionists the focus of our sense of contribution for a while.
You're listening to KBOO on the web, www.kboo.fm. We're pleased to be with Portlander Clifford Walker tonight to talk about removing the signs and symbols of racial hatred and oppression from our national currency and from our public spaces.
See, people don't even know that it was on December 6th that the 13th Amendment was ratified. It's not a holiday. It's the greatest day in American history. Slavery ended, and nobody knows about it. We celebrate the July 4th. That's not even a United States of America holiday because the United States of America didn't exist in 1776. December 6, 1865 was when the 13th Amendment was ratified, ending slavery. That's huge. We should all be letting firecrackers off and jumping around. In fact, I invite you to be a part of the December 6th committee and organize a celebration next December 6th here in Portland for people who think that's worthy of recognizing. Find a spot, have a party, have some pros, talk about free at last. You know, yeah, make December 6th a national holiday. I'm the chairman of the Oregon Commission on Black Affairs, and I have some ambivalent feelings of even working with a group like that, just because of the title, but it's needed, you know. But I would think that that whole issue of race, we shouldn't ask anybody to be anything other than human. And when the census people go out, race should not be something that the government should be involved in. Maybe your income, and so we can get help to those who need it. But what does race have to do with need? Why is race a factor, especially when your anthropologist at Portland State would tell you it's a historical artifact that makes no sense? Nobody agrees on what race is. You know, does your nose determine what race you are, or your lips, or your hair, or your height, or your skin color? You know, what genetic factor determines where you belong? It's just stupid. But we are taught to see each other as race, what, you know, as white and as black. And like I say, you're beige, I'm a little darker, and you know, you're somewhere in the rose or peach or tan, and we don't even look at people for the glory of their color. we are taught to see people in terms of white and black. That's so arcane, so stupid, and it's not helping our perceptions. You know, I've trained in art, so, you know, I think we should have a brown box, and that would probably end the question. Light brown, dark brown, medium brown, white, black, and we would see that. That's so silly. But for a while, as long as the government organizes us being white people and black people, and then, you know, some of it's color, like white and black, and then some of it's continental, like Asian or Hispanic, or, I mean, it's so confusing.
This is Circle A Radio on KBOO 90.7. We're so pleased to have Clifford Walker as our guest tonight.
We're working very, very hard to figure out what it is we can do. There are some laws that created the Oregon Commission, and as best as I can understand it, this is a group of people who have been appointed by the governor. For the most part, there's a state senator and a state representative on the commission. And it's an 11-person commission, 9 appointed by the governor. And we meet, and our charge is to monitor what's going on with black people in the state and see if we can get them more involved in state government and help establish equity. But we really don't have the funds to do it. Because to do those things, you got to have bean counters and investigators and attorneys. And they have not given us the kind of money necessary to be effective with our job, because we're all volunteers. So we don't have the time to go and do these things. But then when you read the Oregonian, you say, I just read a story where they were going to allot $68,000 to find out why it took 3 years to write a police report on this chassis. Where do they get $68,000 to investigate why a report was 3 years late? I mean, help me with that one. But that money's there. And then in an article on the same page, they said they were going to allot $100,000 to find out why minority contractors weren't getting money. You know, their allotment. I'm going, $100,000 to do another study? You know, I mean, it's employing people, and people in college need to be employed, and they do studies, and they can count beans, and they have research methods. But, you know, black people don't know what's going on. I mean, we're 2% of the state, and we're 10% of the prison population. And, you know, the reports of saying, you know, Portland police are stopping blacks at a higher rate than they're stopping whites, but finding less contraband among the blacks. So it doesn't even make sense. If they want to go after the contraband and the criminals, they'd be more effective stopping whites. They're not going after the crime. They're just going after and trying to make life miserable for black people in this town. And having been born in this town, I can attest to a life full of challenges, just, I think, all based on race and police issues, housing, all of that stuff. But, you know, you don't want to waddle in that stuff, that depression, that those challenges. You know, you want to keep the light on, and you want to encourage the kids. So you try to put a smile on it. I love Portland, but I grew up in a Jim Crow Portland, when you couldn't go to the amusement parks, and you had to sit in the balconies, and very few restaurants that would encourage you to come in. See, that's in my lifetime. I know I'm growing, but still, it's a part of my experiences. The old folks have to die off, because we'll carry those chips to our grave. You know, why can't I go to the amusement park, Mama, or go to the swimming pool? And your parents try to explain to you, and it causes you to start believing that maybe there's something wrong with you, or you're not entitled. Because if everybody treats you as if, you know, you're not worthy of, or you're not qualified to go to the fun park or the swimming pool or the movies, you start thinking, what's wrong? And you start blaming yourself, you know, and that can damage a lot of people. Not everybody has the constitution to overcome that kind of oppression. You know, my mother was a school teacher. She retired. The faculty had a tradition that they would have lunch once a month, but they had to call in advance to the restaurant to see if they would even serve my mother. She's a college graduate, University of Arizona, but she can't go in a restaurant here. So you have those discussions at the table, and black people talk about different things at the table. And a lot of what black people talk about is the oppression they feel. And they see how it affects their mothers and their brothers and their sisters and the police incidences and things. And it's a different world. It's a different perspective.
Good evening. You're tuned into KBOO Community Radio, 90.7 in Portland, 91.9 in Hood River, and 100.7 in Corvallis. This is Circle A Radio, and tonight our guest is Clifford Walker, chair of the Oregon Commission on Black Affairs, and a vocal community member in favor of replacing the signs and symbols of racial hatred with signs and symbols that we can all embrace.
It's a different world. It's a different perspective. And you can't expect people to understand it. But, you know, you've seen it. You've seen how your mother's been treated or your father's been treated or, you know, how discouraged they are or how they feel that they're not being treated fairly. And that's an everyday discussion. And it shapes us. And you ask the question, you know, how did you get political? I can't imagine being born, especially in Portland, for a black person not become political. You may not be an activist, but you sure probably wonder why you're being pulled over all the time or being searched all the time. You know, it's not fair. I can laugh now. When I was going to Portland State and I was a younger man, I learned that an automatic police stop in this town was to drive around town with a white woman in the front seat. You would get pulled over. You know, you wouldn't even take a friend home from school if you had a car because you didn't want to get stopped by the police. People don't understand how those little things affect your socialization. I'd love to take you home, but I don't want to be stopped by the police. We had a record shop, the House of Sound. I told you those stories about how they would stop the white kids from coming over to the record shop, accusing them of being in the wrong neighborhood. The police were reinforcing the color line. You're trying to open up a business and the police are the ones that are stopping you from being successful. Well, you can't sue the city up for that. The courts are not a place to redress, you know, so we have to go to the court of public opinion because you sure don't want to go to Multnomah County courts. The Grand Dragon of the Ku Klux Klan was the bailiff to Judge Tooth until the day he died. That would be an indictment on the whole county court to know that they are willing to employ the Grand Dragon of the KKK. That's a true story. I think in 1946, that 37 people were killed in police custody in Portland. 1 year as a result of concussions or taken to the drunk tank or whatever. 37 people. And the story suggests they may have all been black. And you want to know how many years that kind of slaughter of people what happened at the hands of the Portland police.
That article was by Carrie McWilliams and was written for PM Daily, a New York newspaper, published Wednesday, April 25th, 1945. The article was called Northwest Officials Fail to Act on the Cause of Racial Trouble. McWilliams writes, quote, "Police brutality is rampant. 37 persons died in the drunk tank in 1944. Ostensibly from concussions sustained prior to arrest." Again, this is Clifford Walker.
You know, now we're getting one or two a year, but you know, we're a million people, but that at that time, you're talking about a city of maybe 300,000 people, and they were getting rid of 40 people a year, murdering them. Yeah, I've had my experiences in a courtroom. Only time I've ever been bludgeoned.
And you were in the military.
Oh, I was in the military.
No, and that's
another experience. I went in the 60s, and yet that sounds like so long ago. But to me, you know, it's just like yesterday, you know. And it was before the country was, I guess, legally integrated. And I went to train in Texas, and my heart was broken because I'd left Oregon and went to Texas, and it's just the unfair treatment. The white soldiers could go into public places, and the black soldiers couldn't, and we were airmen. And you just said, where am I? what did I just do? Signed a 4-year contract for an organization that allows this kind of stuff to happen? You know, preparing these kids to go to Vietnam when they should be going to Texas. it was a strange time. So I've seen things, and I try to keep the upbeat. And I'm saying, well, instead of just, you know, pulling the blanket over my head, maybe I can work with some people or find some people who would think it is a worthy project to maybe convince our nation to redesign the money and circulate symbols of hope and peace and not symbols of colonial oppression, you know. And now we're dealing with Haiti, and that was all about Thomas Jefferson and his attitudes towards Haiti and, you know, and his wanting to suppress the African independence movements. So it's all tied up. Those poor people in Haiti, they were brought over in slave ships, stuck on an island. If you can't swim, you're there.
And even if you can't swim, where are you going to swim to?
And if you get to the United States, they'll put you in a camp and send you back, you know. And we see how these Haitian refugees for years have been trying to get out of that squalor, that prison. And they're there as a direct result of the way we've been treating the Africans locked up in those Caribbean islands. I call them the slave islands, you know, because that's what they were. And then if you read the history of slavery, you realize that we came over on the same boat. The boat stopped in Havana, and some stopped in Port-au-Prince, and some stopped in, you know, Charlotte, you know, but we're the same people. We're the same people. And just to see that squalor and that oppression that's been going on for the last 200, it hurts. It would have been better off in Africa. It's so sad. But it goes back to our founding fathers and the kind of institutions that they were involved in, the kinds of institutions that they were willing to protect and what they personally chose to do. And we were supporting South Africa. And that was in your lifetime. Mm-hmm. And it was probably one of the most repressive regimes in the world. And they could count on the United States till the last hour to help them. And what is that saying about us? It's not the Democrats, it's not the Republicans, it's the Congress, it's the people of the United States. That kind of legislation and those practices and those wars are being attributed to us. And I hate it. I don't have a clue why we're in Afghanistan or Iraq. It's not about democracy. We don't have democracy here when it comes to voting for president, because we have a thing called an electoral college. You can have the most votes in America and not get the office. And that's happened with Gore. And who are we to be an example for any type of government anywhere in the world when we won't even do it fair here? I'm not telling you anything you don't know. It's like, why are we stuck? Why aren't we trying to do something? Are we all so terrified of the government and the oppression and the resistance, and we have to concede to the fact that we're just captured or subjects? And we have this notion, we think we can do something. And I'm saying, it would be so simple to change the artwork on our money. And that would be saying great things about this nation, that we can do these kinds of things. Why aren't people getting the knowledge? It's up to our educators to teach the truth. If they're unwilling to teach the truth, I don't know what are they afraid of. What if you had a discussion with the children and said, did you know that these men made a living buying and selling and breeding people for money? Most of them would never know and will never be taught that. But we saw when we taught people about what was going on in Germany, the people were, oh, this is terrible. We are no longer going to let swastikas be a part of our art culture or especially our national legendary, because we know it represents oppression of a people. Well, what do you think slave traders represent? Oppression of a people? What are the symbols for racism and racial hate? The colonial plantation system. And you would think that, okay, after World War II, Nazism was terrible. And so terrible we get rid of the symbols and we don't celebrate the portraits of the men of the Third Reich. We're all convinced that slavery was terrible. I don't think you'll have an argument, but we don't connect the people who were responsible for slavery in any way as being terrible. And how do we have that disconnect? If slavery is terrible, what do you think the slavers are? It wouldn't happen without the Washingtons, the Jeffersons, the Jacksons, the Madisons. So when we talk about American history, and people say, well, back then, no, it wasn't okay back then either. And if you had polled the Africans who were here, they would have told you, you know, no, we prefer being back home or being free. But we were never a part of the picture, and we still aren't a part of the picture. If we counted, you wouldn't insult us the way we're being insulted. You know, money is the most precious commodity there is for most. And so when you start giving these children pennies and there's a face of a white supremacist or a race supremacist, let me excuse, on it, or you give them a nickel, there's a picture of a race supremacist on it. You give them a quarter, there's a picture of a race supremacist on it. You give them a dollar bill, there's a picture of a... What are we doing? We're inculcating in our children. They don't even know that they're being inculcated. There's no way they're going to resist changing their values and systems because it's associated with wealth and they want to be wealthy. So we do have a challenge. But the abolitionists, they fought a war for 90 years and they risked everything. And, you know, they want to make John Brown out to be a clown. And, you know, it's just the way we treat our history. You know, I would love to see John Brown as he's truly a martyr. I don't know what you do with martyrs, but I think he's worthy of a study because he gave his life for his belief that slavery should be outlawed. And there's not many people, especially white people, that would go that far at that time. So we have images and role models that are much superior to the slave traders that we're choosing. That's my belief. And I'll talk to anybody about it, you know what I mean? And I like to think I keep an open mind. If you can convince me, I want to be the first one to be convinced that what we're doing is the right thing. But I don't see it. And then when the members of the school board won't talk, city council, it was agreed that the city council would have an open dialogue on racism, but we can't make it happen. Amanda Fritz is supposed to be in charge of that. The mayor has assigned her to take care of that. And then we go back to the Human Relations Commission, and they don't have their stuff together. And like you said, that was a long time ago when I had approached them. And it's a simple thing. It's like, as a member on the Oregon Commission on Black Affairs, I am working on removing signs and symbols of racial hate and racial oppression from the public landscape. Can you support that? Yes or no?
So you're just asking the Human Rights Commission to support that?
Or not?
That's a simple request.
Is this something you could support, as removing symbols of racial hate and racial oppression from our community, our park blocks, our schools? They're doing it all around, everywhere in the country. I'm hoping Portland will join the League of Cities that are making those changes.
Is embracing the Constitution and our so-called founding fathers a liberal value? Here's what Cliff Walker has to say.
Liberal, maybe so. That's why I jumped to come down here to chat with you guys, because there's a guy named Tom Hartman, and he celebrates Thomas Jefferson and all those races. And when the liberals are espousing the greatness of those guys, I'm saying, man, don't you know where they went every night at home? And I'm so disappointed that, I mean, I have nothing against Hartman, but it's just like, when you celebrate Washington and Jefferson and Madison, you're telling me you're crazy about races. And you're the liberal voice in town? Okay, liberal Portland voice. You know, you got a beautiful audience because apparently you're having a good time here. But I don't think you understand that when you celebrate the lives of Washington, Jefferson, and Jackson, you're celebrating the oppression of black people. Let's have that talk, Tom.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because I was going to say there's so many white liberals who are constantly saying in our Constitution and our founding fathers and holding them up as these are who we need to get back to these ideals.
And so you ask them to look at Article 1, Section 9 and Article 4, Section 2. And that's what our founding fathers, how they felt to deal with Africans. It's a wonderful constitution for white supremacists. But that's all it is. It's a constitution for white supremacy. And when those guys met in Philadelphia, they sold the freedom of black people out. And it was a great discussion. In fact, there was a guy, I think his name was George Mason. He worked on the Constitution because of those provisions. He refused to sign it. Those stories are there. There were moral people there. A lot of people would not participate. They weren't going to contribute to signing that, of that pact, because of its racist implications. But you never hear that story. And I'm just learning it. I got one foot in the grave. I'm finally, why didn't anybody tell me, And I'm up here, Jefferson School of Mine. I'm going, no. I'm embarrassed now that I was kept so ignorant for so long. Why didn't somebody help me understand who these guys are? I started studying the money and started, okay, who are these guys? And the one thing they had in common, they were race supremacists and they were slave traders. And yes, they were presidents, some of them, but that at most was for 8 years. They lived their whole life as slave traders. Before they were presidents, while they were presidents, and after they were presidents, they were selling and buying and selling people. So I'm saying, I'm not a scholar. I'm not the top of my class in any of that stuff. But if I can figure it out, is everybody else blind or what? How can we excuse it? I don't think we can excuse it anymore. And truly want to be a part of the world community, because our behavior is racist as a nation. Everybody, why do these people want to do what they're doing to this country? Excuse me? Because they're trying to get rid of the signs and symbols of racial hate and racial oppression. And the United States is a symbol of racial hate and racial oppression. And that's evidenced in its symbols on its currency. Let's put the abolitionists on the money and say, I like this country. I like where they're going. I like their look, They're about humanity. I feel good, And I'm going to share this with you, too. And this is where I get out. Old Glory, the flag. Those 13 stripes symbolize a period of time when racial oppression was at its greatest. Those 13 colonies agreed to oppress black people. So when you see that flag and you see those stripes and you understand what the symbolism of those stripes are, why don't we have 50 stripes? These were the states that agreed to have a compact pressing black people. And that's what the flag stands. Forget the old rebel flag. Look at the old glory and study the symbols and what it means. And you'll see that every day, when you start a basketball game and we're all standing there with our hands on our hearts and looking up at that red, white, and blue flag, we're really some kind of way pledging an allegiance to a symbol like the Nazi symbol. But we don't go into it. We don't talk about it, but it has its impact. It's subliminal. And I grew up in Oregon, so I don't have that East Coast colonial sense of, I'm a lot closer to the Tillamook and the Chinook and the Klamath. That's the history I want to know more about, the Cayuse and the Paiute and the Apache and the Comanche and the Arapaho, this is the history I want to know more about. And then that's another history of broken treaties.
So why aren't you writing the curriculum? That's what I want to know. I think they're still teaching the same thing they were teaching in the 60s, 70s, 80s, when we were in school.
I'm sure they are. And it's very, the history of Oregon. The history of Oregon. Oregon may be the only state in the Union that was constituted, a constitution for white only. So that has its impact and its practices. These people aren't long off the covered wagons. When I was in high school, we were celebrating 100 years. And come on, that's popping a finger. There was a guy named Vanderpool, Salem. He was actually found guilty of being black in Oregon. They tried him because it was against the state constitution for a person to be black. You were breaking the law to be black and being in Oregon. And there's evidence that they ran him out of the state. The history of Oregon, it's I guess, interesting. They had a lot of troubles with the Native Americans, a lot of wars. You've heard about the Whitman Massacre. Here I am, a state commissioner, and you go down to the state capitol, and they have this artwork. It's a legend of the history of Oregon, and they have two black people in the story, and both of them were slaves. One was to Lewis and Clark, and another one was a slave to a ship captain. There's no depiction of a free black person in The Legend of Oregon. And they have this tremendous focus on, I think her name is Narcissus Whitman. And she's celebrated in Oregon history for being the first white woman. They don't talk about the first Chinese woman. They never talk about the first black woman. They never talk about, you know, but this is part of our legend, and it's at the Capitol. It's a tribute to the first white woman that came to Oregon. And, you know, say, okay, you know, where's the first black woman or the first Japanese woman? You know, well, that doesn't count because we don't look at history outside of the advent of white people. And so, come on. That's okay, but what about the advent of, you know, well, I say Mexican people, because that's another history. And one of the things that disturbs me, and I don't know if it's because my mother was a school teacher, but she cautioned me, and I listen to it every day, even the President of the United States talks about Americans, and it says, you know, Mexicans are sneaking into America. No, I don't think so. America is a continental concept. It's a hemispheric concept. Everybody on this side of the oceans are Americans, but we talk about it as if we're the only Americans, and it's ignorance. And I'm embarrassed that we talk about in that kind of a. We are United Staters. People don't even know who we are. They think we're Americans, but politically, we're United Staters. And if we have a treaty with another country, we talk about what's good for the United Staters, not what's good for Americans, because we don't represent all of Americans. But if you listen to the news, they just constantly are so sloppy with who we are. You know, we're protecting America. No, we're not. It's the United States that we have an interest in. And the United States is not America. You know, we haven't gotten that far yet. Kids don't get it. Mm-hmm. You know, so I'm concerned about it, because when our national leaders, Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, talking that sloppiness, they're saying they don't have it defined. And they're the ones who are supposed to continue teaching us, and they're not doing it. You know, that's how I see it. And pay attention to it.
You are tuned in to KBOO, broadcasting from our studios in Portland, Oregon. And tonight our guest is Portlander Clifford Walker, who is also the chair of the Oregon Commission on Black Affairs. We spoke with him about the need for dialogue with those in power in our government on a city, state, and national level to address the symbols of racial hatred and oppression that are still on our currency and in our public spaces.
I'm not saying that you have to go along with it, but I sure would like to know your opinion. Which side, you know, you take sides on everything. Why don't you take a side on this? Blumenauer, same thing. Talk about it. And that's what happened at the founding of this country, is they chose not to talk about it. People were bringing petitions to end slavery. They wouldn't even address the petitions. They wouldn't even let them come in. So we have reverted back into the way we deal with these problems of race is just not talk about it. And that's the strategy. And they want you to, well, go get people to protest and, you know, get indignant, and then maybe we'll talk to you if you get 400 people down there with signs yelling, you know, but that's so disgraceful. And why can't you just say it's not right to have racists as our role models for children? Why do we have to put, well, you know, we got 300 people to march around the block to get you to look at the facts? The Jewish community would not allow their children to go to a school where there was a statue of Adolf Hitler at the front door. How is it black people could allow their children to go to a school where there's a statue of a slave trader and a race supremacist at the front door? I don't get it. I mean, to me, it's just like, isn't that insulting? And we're so numb to the insults. because we've been insulted all our lives. We're anesthetized to the pain, you know. It's crazy, but it's so blatant. It's so obvious people can't see it. Some years ago, they had a gold coin called the Cougarrand. You ever heard of that? It was a 1 ounce gold coin made out of the gold taken from South Africa. And when the South African regime was being challenged and about to collapse, the South African government flooded the world with these 1 ounce gold coins, and they were selling them. And it's called Krugerrand because the architect of apartheid was a guy named Paul Kruger. And I'm sitting at home, and I'm seeing on all three of them, then there was only three channels, the Oregonian and all the newspapers, full ads asking people to buy Krugerrands, this gold coin with the image of the architect of apartheid on it. And the whole city was supporting that campaign to bolster the racist regime in South Africa. And I'm just saying, you could not sell a gold coin with Hitler's face on it in this country. But you can trade in American currency with all these slave traders, so I guess I'm not really surprised now. But you just ask, what's going on? Is anybody thinking? Does anybody care? And I would hope so. And I think we are sensitive to symbols. You know, we should have some legacy we can leave our children. You know, we should carry the fight. We can't just continue to allow our tax dollars to support memorials for racism. And we deserve better than that.
Thanks so much to Clifford Walker. He can be reached at Negustudio, NegusStudio, at AOL.com or at 503-287-3591. More information about the campaign can be found at noslavetraders.com. Thank you for listening to Circle A Radio. We air the first and third Wednesdays here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland. To contact us, you can go to kboo.fm/Circle A Radio, where you can listen to our past work, or you can contact us at circlearadio@gmail.com. Our next show airs February 3rd. Thanks for listening.
In these days and times expressly, I feel need to call on our ancestors, our forebears, speak their names, give thanks, pour a little out for them that fought for our freedom, promoted peace, resisted, challenged our ideas about words, sounds, images, movement, made us sing, wanna make love, rebel. Ancestors, forebearers, both forgotten and remembered. Keep your memory, power, spirit reverberating out into the hemispheres, ecospheres, atmospheres. Quell our fears. Keep us moving upward and forward. Watch over us, watch over us, watch over us. Writers of love, life, struggre, dreams. Audre Lorde, Ted Jones, Gwendolyn Brooks, W.E.B. Du Bois, James Baldwin, Phyllis Wheatley, Lorraine Hansberry, Pablo Neruda, Zora Neale Hurston, Ferdinand Pacheco, Carter G. Woodson, Alan Locke, Tony Cade Bambara, Jean Toomer, painters in broad strokes and sculptors of life, Basquiat, Georgia O'Keeffe, Frida Kahlo, Romare Bearden, Columbus Knox, Augusta Savage, Henry Ossawa Tanner, Edmonia Lewis, Diego Rivera, makers of music, but not just music, of life, Art Blakey, John Coltrane, David Honeyboy Edwards, Mahalia, Amalia, Nina, Ella, Elvin Jones.